good morning. Hello, everybody. Hope you guys had a good Easter. Who's ready for life to go back to normal? Not? Who is? I'm not. But ready or not, here it comes. If you're visiting with us today, great to have you on our fellowship this morning. We are the Cape Town Church of Christ. I bring you good news that we have come to a close of our series called Believe. There we go. There's one good man. What we did is we moved about 7 weeks, took us to go through 3 verses in the Bible, but prayerfully you learned something about those 3 verses. Now, it is supposed to go from 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 1 to 11, so we must still do 4 to 11. But I thought, you know, we can't spend the whole year there, so I thought let's put that chapter on hold for now. And then we will continue with verse 4. When it seems like you guys need believing, then we'll move to verse 4 and we'll work our way through to verse 11. Today, the title of the message today is What a Dog Can Do with Faith. Okay, I assume a dog can do many things if it could have faith. But that's what we need to try and unpack today. So if you can please send your Bibles to Numbers chapter 13. We'll be reading quite a long text from there. This is one of those very inspiring, yet in the same time challenging stories in the Bible. I do believe that when we get this, it can change our lives. So if you're a little bit concerned, if you're visiting with us, you're concerned about the dog, it will make sense at some point. Next week, we're doing What a Cat Can Do with Faith, and then the... No, I'm only kidding. This is a once-off. Okay, so let me just paint the picture, some context here before we read Numbers 13 as to what's happening. In the book of Exodus, actually starting in the book of Genesis, the nation of Israel is formed, the Jewish nation as we know it, through Joseph and his brothers, the sons of Jacob. And they formed the Jewish nation. At that time, things are going well with them in Egypt. But the Pharaoh that knew them dies. There's a succession of kings. Time goes by. And suddenly, it's not going well with the Jewish people in Egypt at all. And instead of being people of affluence, they have become slaves for a period of about 400 years. And during that time, it says in the book of Exodus, that during that long period the king of Egypt died, the Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. So these guys are crying out, our slavery is terrible, it's another hard, tough day, and not in Africa, but in Egypt. Please, God, deliver us. They were beaten, they were pounded by their slave drivers, and their only hope was to turn to God. So God sends them a guy called Moses. Moses comes, and through a series of miracles and the early part of the book of Exodus, actually helps these guys to get out of Egypt, and not only to get out of Egypt and the Pharaoh to let them go, but also for the people to give them jewelry and food and all kinds of other things so that the land that they were going to go to, Canaan, the promised land, that they would have some goods to go with them. Okay, so sort of a nice move. You leave, you live in Sandton and you move to an even better place. Although you were a slave in Sandton, you move to a better place and you get to move with all of the things of the people of Sandton. That's the picture, that's the backdrop. So they are in the desert. They are on the boundary of the land of Canaan, the promised land. They now need to go and fight and take the land. And God promises them, saying, listen, you, this is a great land. You guys can do this. You're set up for victory. But just for you to be able to know what it is that you're going to inherit, why don't you choose a leader from each of the tribes of Israel? There were 12. Each of the tribes of Israel, let them go and spy out the land just so that they can bring you back a report of what it is that you guys are going to and that you would in the process be encouraged. So that is the context. Now we see what happens. Moses then picks the 12 guys, the leaders. He sends them to Egypt, to the Canaan, to the promised land. And this is what goes down. Numbers 13, verse 17. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, "Go up through the Negev and on into the hill country. See what the land is like, whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled, walled, or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. It was the season of the first ripe grapes." So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob towards Lebo Hamath. They went up through the Negev and came to Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, Talmai, the descendants of Anak, lived. Hebron had been built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of the 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. Verse 27. They gave Moses this account. "We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan." Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with them said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. And they said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim, the descendants of Anak, come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, He will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Then the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the Israelites. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all these miraculous signs I've performed among them? I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them. But I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they. From there, Moses jumps into some theological gymnastics trying to get God to forgive him. Skip down to verse 20. After the begging for forgiveness, the Lord replied, I have forgiven them, as you asked. Nevertheless, as surely as I live and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of the men who saw my glory and the miraculous signs I performed in Egypt and in the desert, who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on an oath to their forefathers. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. But because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went to, and his descendants will inherit it. What a story. When you are faithless, some ugly things can happen, and they can happen quickly. We're going to unpack a number of them in the passage. When you're faithless, you tend to see obstacles everywhere. They said in chapter 13, verse 27, when we went into the land to which you sent us, it does flow with milk and honey, here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. Verse 31, we can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. I said, listen, we went to the land. Yes, it's milk and honey everywhere. Yes, it's filled with great fruit. Hey, you guys, come over here with that pole. And these guys bring a pole, and on the pole is one cluster of grapes. How big of a grape is that? They say, here's this fruit. It is as you said, but the people who live there are powerful. The cities are fortified and very large. We can't. We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. Obstacles everywhere. Have you ever been there? God calls you to do a particular thing for him, to serve in a particular way, to become a particular person, but it's obstacles everywhere. And you can just give 50 reasons as to why it cannot be done. That's what faithlessness does. Not only do they see obstacles everywhere, we see something else. They see these obstacles as bigger than what they actually are. Look in verse 32. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there were of great size. We even saw the Nephilim there. The land we explored devours those living in it. Cannibalistic land. Have you ever seen that? Land-eating humans. All the people were of great size. There were no short people there. None. Not even one. No medium height people. No kids. Just giants everywhere. And then they said, we even saw the Nephilim there. Now, the Nephilim was in Genesis chapter 6. These were known as giant warriors. They were all wiped out in the flood. But miraculously, they saw even the Nephilim there. When you lack faith, you see things, obstacles, as bigger than they are. Have you ever exaggerated obstacles and the challenge at hand because you lack faith? Hey, here's this person. I can maybe reach out to them and invite them to church with me. But ooh, they look so mean. They look so not interested. They have not spoken yet. They look so non-interested in Jesus. Oh no, this is definitely, this is one of the scariest moments in my life. I can definitely not do it. See, it's not that I don't want to become a Christian. It's the obstacles. They're just so big. It's not that I don't want to change. It's the obstacles. They're just so big. Are they? A number of years ago, someone made a suggestion to myself. A friend of mine made the suggestion to myself and said, hey, there's a great opportunity in Johannesburg for Lisa and I, for our family to move up there and learn some new things, have some new experiences. And they asked me, what do you think of that idea? I said, that's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life. And I said, why? I said, well, a number of reasons. I mean, one is, who on earth in their right mind would ever want to live in Joburg? Who signs up to move to Sodom and Gomorrah? I said, but besides that, I simply can't do it to my children. And they said, well, what do you mean? I said, my poor children, they would just definitely, it won't work. And then the one brother asked me a question I didn't expect, and he said, why, what are you afraid of? What are you afraid would happen to them? Man, I was thinking, and I was thinking hard. What is it? What is it? What is it? I couldn't come up with anything. What I lacked was faith. I didn't have it. We didn't move. It was only years later that I built the faith, got the faith, to actually not see the obstacles, but see God and move. When you are faithless, you see obstacles as bigger than they are. Number three. When you are faithless, you start to lose confidence in your calling. Take a look in verse 33. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes. I don't know if you've ever thought of yourself as a grasshopper. Where did the problem lie? We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes. They started losing not only confidence in God, but confidence in their calling and what it is that God called them to do. Because they lost their confidence, they seemed like grasshoppers in their own eyes, and we looked the same to them. How did they determine that? Did they ask them, hey, Mr. Giant, I was just wondering, what do you think I look like? And then the giant said, giant after giant, you know what you remind me of? You remind me of a grasshopper. Was that what happened? Why grasshoppers? Back then, grasshoppers, people ate them. It was like a delicacy. These giants, in their mind, they were literally going to eat them. They had zero confidence in what God called them to do. And when you become faithless, that's what happens. I just cannot do it. I cannot serve. I cannot change. I cannot help others. I cannot be in the kid zone. I remember back in the day when the Kids Zone Watch was read out and they said, hey, these are the new volunteers. Back then you weren't asked. It was just read. Someone would come up, they would read a list and say, this is the next group going in. And I would sit there and I would say, Judgment Day, buckle up. I can't do it. Number four. When you are faithless, you draw others into your misery. Verse 32, they, the ten, spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land that they explored. They, the ten, spread among the Israelites a bad report. According to Exodus, there were 600,000 men in Israel, not counting the women and children. Ten people went around 600,000 people to draw them into their misery. This cannot be done, guys. Man, did you guys hear what Moses and Joshua and Caleb want us to do? Oh, man, this, do you think? I don't think it can be done. This can't be done. It's too hard. As a matter of fact, I think you bring up a good point. I think it's crazy. As a matter of fact, I think the expectations here are just too high. Giants everywhere, land-charming people. This is a bad idea. Faithlessness loves company, and it is contagious, and it draws other people in. It is always looking for something or someone to share in its misery. What are your conversations like about the calling of the Lord, being a Christian, serving in His kingdom? Full with faith, or drawing people into misery? Number five, when you're faithless, you start feeling sorry for yourself. Chapter 14, verse 1. That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. 12 spies go, explore the land, come back, wonderful fruit. 2 guys, excited, fired up, Joshua, Caleb. 10 guys, not fired up at all. Okay, happy about the fruit, but seems it is impossible for them to do. These 10 people spread among the Israelites, the 600,000 men, women, and children, a bad report. This cannot be done. Okay, we don't know the time frame, but it doesn't seem too long. If half of these guys had a kid and a wife, they would put it over 1 million people. Now we have, moments later, from them coming back with a massive cluster of grapes, we have 1 million people who raised their voices and wept aloud. What does that even sound like? Can you picture, I think PE has about 800,000 people in it. Can you imagine the city of PE at one shot, one night, the whole of PE, weeping, wailing. They have not even seen the land. They have no idea what's going on. They have not seen the Nephilim. They have not seen a giant. They have not seen the land eating people. It's all just stories. But they start feeling sorry for themselves because that's what faithlessness does. Poor me. This is so hard. I'm just a teenager. You know, how can the Lord possibly expect me to live this way? I'm too young. We know the drill. I'm too old. I'm just right. That doesn't work. Something must be wrong with that. No matter what it is, when you're faithless, you just feel sorry for yourself. But it doesn't stop there. There's another one, number 6. Then you start to grumble and complain, and particularly sometimes against your leaders. I know that never happens here, but it happened in the Bible. And chapter 14, verse 2, all the Israelites, so again, we're talking about 1 million people, grumbled against Moses and Aaron. Verse 10, the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Oh my goodness. Can you see how this is escalating step by step? We don't like these guys that led us out of Egypt. We don't like these guys and what they are planning. We don't like what it is that they want to do. We don't like what it is that they're expecting of us. We don't like the land. We don't like them. I have an idea. Stone them. It's not even ignore them. Stone them. Kill them. Discredit them. Tell other people how crazy they are with their crazy ideas. Let's kill them right now. But it doesn't stop there. Faithlessness has no end. 7. You start to lose the plot completely. Verse 2. This is what they're saying now. If only we had died in Egypt. Really? Or in the desert? Why is the Lord bringing us to this land, only to let us fall by the sword. Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Again, imagination is carried away. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to each other, we've got a brilliant plan. We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. They lose the plot completely. If only we had died in Egypt. Didn't we read in the very beginning in the book of Exodus that they were the ones crying out because of their slave drivers, please deliver us? They were the ones beaten and pounded and had no life and said, please deliver us. And God said, oh, totally, I'll help you. And he delivers them. He takes them to the land of promise. And he says, but there's also some work involved. You're going to have to conquer the land. But don't worry, I'm on your side. But now they lose the plot completely. So easy to do that, isn't it? You know, so many of us in some way or another, most likely, at some point in our time, say to God, deliver me. Deliver me. My life is a disaster. I'm feeling lonely. I'm feeling neglected. My marriage is a mess. Whatever it might be, I'm feeling purposeless. Deliver me. And God steps in and he says, sure thing. And he delivers. But then along the path, there are some challenges that come along the way. And then suddenly we look at these challenges and we think, but wait a minute. This is not what I signed up for. I want to go back to Egypt. I want to go back. What's the problem? The problem is simply a lack of faith. How does God respond to all of this? Is this something, you know, sometimes we talk, I've done it. I just feel a little bit faithless. Ever said that, felt that? You know, here's where I am, here's who I need to be, here's where our family group is, this is where we would like to be, or just a little bit faithless. How does God respond to this cannot be done, the Lord's will cannot be done attitude? Chapter 14:11. The Lord said to Moses, how long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all the miraculous signs I've performed among them? I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them. But I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they. He said, listen, the promise still sticks. I said, I'll build a great nation. I said, I'll bless. These guys don't want it. They don't. So if they don't want it, Moses, my guess is, well, we'll do this. Why don't we just strike them all down? And you and I, Joshua, Caleb, the three of us, we'll do it again. Because I want to bless, but they don't want to be blessed. Why do they treat me with contempt? Verse 21. As surely as I live and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of the men who saw my glory and the miraculous signs I performed in Egypt and in the desert, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on earth to their forefathers. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. That sounds dark. But, verse 24, my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly. I will bring him into the land he went to, and his descendants will inherit it. But my servant Caleb has a different spirit. What made him different? It says in verse 30, Caleb silenced the people when they complained originally. Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, come on guys, stop with the faithless talk. We should go up and take possession of the land. We can certainly do it. Confident in his calling. Listen here, God's with us, guys. It's going to happen. Shh, stop the faithlessness. And chapter 14, verse 6, along with Joshua. Joshua and Caleb tore their clothes when the people were grumbling and complaining against God. And said to the entire Israelite assembly, the land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. Guys, we're not going to a dump. We're going to an awesome place. If the Lord is pleased with us, which he seemingly certainly was, he will lead us into the land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and he will give it to us. Only Do not rebel against the Lord, against Yahweh. Do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them. What a guy. What made Caleb different? The word Caleb in Hebrew is dog. His name was Dog. What kind of parent what kind of parent, like the Clutis, they have a son who knows Hebrew. What kind of parent, what kind of Hebrew parent, let's get them off the hook. What kind of Hebrew parent calls their child dog? Can you imagine, Michaela, my mother, and I were having a conversation the other day talking about if my mom had a daughter, what they would have called, what she would have called her. Can you remember what it was? What was it, Mom? It was something scary. When they said it, the first thing I said is, thank God I was a man. What parent calls their kid dog? Can you imagine that that's how you have to grow up? Hey, dog, come here. Okay, we need to pick teams. I want to take dog, and I want to take so-and-so. Can you imagine what it must do to your self-esteem? Being called dog. You know, most of us in here, we have issues with our childhood, issues with growing up. I would say the only issue I have with my childhood is that I don't have an issue with my childhood. And maybe that is an issue in itself that I would one day have to figure out. But we have all these complexities, all these challenges. This guy's name was Dog. There was no reason for him to have any hope. And yet he is the one and only man, along with Moses and Joshua, that ended up going into the promised land. Why? Because he had faith. What can a dog do with faith? Anything. Because his focus was not on himself. He said, guys, we can do it, but the only reason we can do it is because God has called us to do it. Yes, it's a beautiful land. It's a great land. We need to go there. It's going to be awesome. And we can do it because he has called us to do it. He will lead us into the land. He will give it to us. Do not be afraid of them. You're saying that the land is swallowing up the people. Let me tell you, we will swallow them up. I said, but dog, how on earth is this going to happen? Because their protection is gone. But Yahweh is with us. Now, what I want to leave us with today is no matter who you are, no matter where you're from, no matter where you're at, you cannot be worse than a dog. You might feel it. You might feel at the bottom of the barrel. You might feel at the end of your rope. You're at the end of the end of the rope. There's a thread at the end of the rope, and you're hanging onto that thread, and it seems like it's going down. What can a dog do with faith? If you hold on to God's promises, you put your faith in him and not in yourself, what can you do? You can see the promised land. You can head to where it is that God wants you to go.